Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, these 2% swings we're seeing in the markets, not as uncommon, especially when you look at the track record of markets here in Singapore and across the world over the last 7 weeks. And just goes to show how quickly sentiment can shift from hope to despair and back as global and local equities start to find their footing in today's session and try to find reasons to support this sudden bounce back. But is all this potential volatility that we're seeing at the surface a good thing? Well, to make sense of that today on Market View, we're joined by Mr. Jacob Du, the Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management, to give us a quick halftime check of how markets are doing at the midpoint of this month. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us and welcome back. It's been a while.
Thank you very much, JP, for inviting me again.
The last time we spoke, we touched on the gradual gains in markets during that time, and it's also accelerated quite a bit at the start of June. I was going to ask about the sudden pullback in markets, but today we're seeing a sudden resurgence in confidence. Some people are crediting it also to the Fed's initiation of this corporate bond buying scheme that seems to be propping up U.S. markets. But some are also crediting it to the upcoming phase two easing of the circuit breaker measures here. Care to share your thoughts on what is playing into the sudden reversal in sentiment today?
The current market movement that you're seeing, where the market is going up, is actually underpinned by the support coming from the Federal Reserve. The primary action that they have announced over last night is that they're going to come up with a new program where they're going to buy about $250 billion worth of corporate bonds directly instead of via the ETFs. And that itself sends a signal to investors that potentially the Federal Reserve is going to provide support to companies across the board. So the retail investors over the last couple of weeks have come in a very strong way, you know, to support the market. Now, if you want to look at, say, the fundamentals, it doesn't gel at all. In reality, you're looking at companies' financials in a very bad shape. Economies may be opening, but it's not opening in a very solid way that we can see pre-COVID crisis. So which means that over the next few quarters, you're going to see announcements of results that's not going to be ugly to begin with. But the market's not going to buy that, because at the end of the day, they know that the companies themselves eventually will be able to get out of this current situation simply because they have the support of the Federal Reserve. Now, over the longer term, that itself will increase the moral hazards that comes to the play in this market.
Now, we talked about moral hazards last month, Jacob. The worry now is that if the Federal Reserve continues to buy or escalate their corporate bond buying as a form of support for companies, it could create an army of zombie firms out there. And this was a similar criticism, at least, of bailouts made by Chinese regulators last decade to try and keep certain firms alive when they shouldn't be. Is that going to be another form of moral hazard, or should the Fed be applauded for trying to keep as many companies afloat and trying to keep job losses and defaults from accelerating at a pace that markets and economies cannot handle?
Well, in the short term wise, I would say that there'll be a lot of market observers who's going to commend and appreciate what the Federal Reserve is doing. And as it is, you can see some of the experts out there, they're already saying that the Federal Reserve done a very good job. But to me, at the end of the day, is that if you look at what exactly is happening, if a company is not doing particularly well, you need to allow the market to operate freely. You need to allow the company, if it can't manage its entire finances, it can't manage its business, it's not able to adapt, it needs to restructure, it needs to change. And that's a natural course of things. But when you have got a central bank coming in to buy away the debt level and to sustain its current business model, it's not going to work over the longer time. The problem I have is that the central banks who are adopting this measure, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to sell this bond eventually at some stage? Because then you're hoping that in a couple of years to come, in the 2 to 3 years to come, the companies will recover from this and hopefully they'll be in a position to repay the money when the bonds matures, or hopefully someone else will buy these bonds off the central bank's books. But as we have seen in the past, it has not happened at all. So which means at some stage, the central bank will have to figure out exactly how are they going to manage this debt exposure that they have. And I don't think they have an answer to it yet, right now.
The counter argument to your point, though, is that these are extraordinary times, and that if COVID-19 did not happen, a lot of these companies might not be in these dire straits that you're talking about. Do you buy that particular counter argument, or do you think that COVID-19 really just exposed a lot of these cracks or exacerbated the deficiencies that we're seeing in some of these companies that are suffering right now?
Well, in every crisis that we've seen in the past, it has always been the case where the market advocate that company needs to restructure. If you look at 1997, where the Asian financial crisis hits Asia across the board, and you see Indonesian companies going down in the bad shape, you see Malaysian companies having problems, even the companies in Thailand, South Korea. Across Asia, the advocate was to allow these companies to fail if you need to. But right now, we are not allowing that. We are not allowing the market to function the way it is. Yes, no doubt, if you're going to let them fail, there'll be high job loss. The people is going to be very angry about this. Sentiment is going to be very high, no doubt about it. But I would say that there's other means and ways in order to tackle this situation. Because the central banks have always adopted a common approach. Whenever there's a crisis, you reduce your interest rates. But the interest rate, the only way they're going to solve the problem, not necessarily. Because in this case, now we're looking at an economy that's stalled. No one is able to generate any revenue. Therefore, we need to manage the cost. So what happens to the cost, which means your tenancy agreements, your rental agreements, and things like that. If you're going to provide a short-term relief, you make sure that the money is actually flowing down to the very people you try to help. And that's exactly how fiscal policy will need to come in. So you cannot be relying entirely on the monetary policy alone. And that monetary policy, by just buying all these risky bonds, will not help in the longer term. Because if you try to unwind it, the market will drop, and that's when it will come to a political discussion. The Federal Reserve hands are going to be tight. As it is right now, I think that, you know, in some ways they're being influenced by the government. So the Federal Reserve do not have a true free hand in the market per se.
We're still speaking to Mr. Jacob Du, the Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management here on Money FM 89.3. So we're talking about the possible moral hazards from the Fed's unlimited stimulus and the ramp up in corporate bond buying. But there's another thing that's happened also in the last couple of weeks. Also, we have seen stories of retail investors rushing towards stocks, with some might say even with no rhyme or reason, some starting to favor even these bankrupt companies like, say, Hertz. It doesn't seem to make any sense, but retailer investors seem to be, and day traders seem to be proliferating a lot. Do you think that this is a warning sign, though, for markets? Does this flag potential reasons to be cautious?
Well, I would say that if it's without the Federal Reserve intervention, I would say that these are warning signs. But because the Federal Reserve is inside the market itself, that gives these investors a false sense of confidence to buy into all these stocks. Frankly, as a money manager, we can never understand anyone who does not even want to look at the fundamentals of a specific company and decide to invest, because we are talking about long-term investment. We're not talking about today we buy the stock, hopefully we'll get up to 900% return and I'll sell off within the next 24, 48 hours. So that's the worrying sign to me at the end of the day. It doesn't make any sense that investors come in to buy bankrupt companies and hoping that this will correct. Yes, short-term wise, you see it going up and you will feed this insatiable desire in order to gain from the stock market. And it's exactly the same situation we have seen in the past. It happened back in Singapore in 1993. It also happened in China in 2015. And globally, during the dot-com bubble, it happened again, where investors came in to buy any company, regardless of the fundamentals, regardless of whether there's even a business strategy. People were just buying those stocks blindly. And what happened after that? It crashed each time. Now, how long is the crash going to come? When it's going to come? I can't tell for sure for now. But at the moment, everybody is just enjoying the market exuberance that's displaying itself.
If there is a potential of a sudden reversal, or as you mentioned, a crash, heaven forbid, what strategy are you advising clients, especially with this accelerated economic decoupling that we haven't even touched on, and also the fears of a second wave of infections in certain countries, just some of these risk factors? When you add this sudden heightened trading activity and volatility, what strategy are you advising clients?
Well, right now, since last I was telling you about that, our main focus was actually in the 5G sector and in healthcare. We have, in fact, looking at levels to get out at this point in time. Instead, we're moving into a fixed income issue and even to structured products, where essentially on the fixed income side, we're looking at taking on 1-year exposure on deposits with the Middle East banks. And that itself, up to leverage, will give us approximately about 8% return per annum. And that's a pretty decent return on fixed income space for a single year rated name. And on the equity side, we're looking at a look back options, where basically we have the option to look at what's the lowest point. So which means over the 2 months, these 2 months itself, at the lowest point we can determine that will be the strike level that will determine our price. So the way I look at it is that even the market euphoria, if it goes up, I'm okay because I can choose the lowest point from starting here. But if the market were to crash over these 2 months, I'm able to choose lowest point. That itself will determine my potential return on my structure. So that is the kind of stuff I'm moving into, to away from the entire noise and the increasing froth that I'm seeing in the market.
Do you advise folks to perhaps come in and participate in what's becoming a trader's market, as you mentioned to me before the interview, or is this still a time to be cautious?
Well, I would say that for anyone who has a long-term perspective, they need to be cautious. But for those who are just coming in to buy and trade this market and trying to turn around within, you know, a day or two, then they've got to be very careful. The returns of which I will say, and if you're lucky enough, you may actually get out. But once you are caught on the wrong foot, the loss is going to incur will be much higher than the gains you're going to get.
So you got to stop dancing once the music stops. Well, we don't know when that is. Finally, Jacob, let's talk about the recent turn of events in Hong Kong. And since we spoke, there have been questions raised about Hong Kong and its status as a global financial hub. And talk about other speculations in the markets. It's prompted folks and investors across Asia to speculate on a possible exodus of funds for competing cities like Singapore. As a wealth manager, have you seen more inquiries regarding these potential shifts of funds towards Singapore? And will this be a long-term upside for wealth managers, especially those who manage family offices like yourself?
Well, we actually do see the benefits. As such as right now, we actually have an increase in the inquiries from fund managers based in Hong Kong and territory itself. And we're discussing about collaborations with them. Of course, the general consensus of the situation right now in Hong Kong, right? Well, the fact is that, you know, with what's happening on the political front, what's going to happen on the economic front, the issue is whether the freedom is going to persist. If it's not going to happen, then, you know, and even for the Chinese themselves who are not going to be accepted by the Hong Kongers, then what's going to happen next as a financial center? In terms of the inquiries that we have, it's more about, you know, relocating the funds over from Hong Kong to Singapore, and we have to work out the details. The ones generally who are leaving as individuals are the ones who have protested, but that itself make a very small number. But if you want to ask me whether there's a general mass exodus of the general population, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
Mr. Jacob Du, Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management, we thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join us here on Money FM 89.3. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued safety and good health during these times. Stay safe and have a great rest of the day, sir.
All right. Same to you. Thank you very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.